You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the Sporticos Football Stories Podcast. I am Ander Iturralde.
And I'm Craig Hansen.
And today it's just the two of us. Myself and Craig are here to dissect England and Spain's performances at Euro 2020. Now that the dust has settled, we will get into the highs and lows of the tournament from our own perspectives.
Yes, Ander, Spain reached the semi-finals, England reached the final. There's so much to talk about concerning both teams, and I can't wait to get stuck into it.
So, it didn't come home in the end, Craig.
No, it did not. It did not at all. But it was expected. I did preempt it on the previous podcast. But
yeah.
But still,
we went through the whole thing of like losing at home, the final, dramatically.
Yeah, it was super predictable, I think. But really cool that we made it to the final. Super proud. You know, really just awesome experience. This tournament was really amazing for England fans, I think. Really cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we're here to do Spain and England, our two respective countries of origin. Obviously, I have probably even a greater grasp on England than Spain. And yeah, that was very interesting to observe. England getting to where they got. There's a lot to it. Even like there's the negative aspects to how it all kind of came undone at the end, and how the tournament kind of went, and how they kind of got away with certain things. Some deficiencies, you could say, within their own like play and system and setup. But I mean, they did get to the final, and they almost got it. They almost made it. They almost beat Italy in the shootout. It didn't. It wasn't meant to be. We weren't able to punch through at the end. I don't know. We'll just go like through our general thoughts. But what are your observations, or what would you like to get into?
Well, I guess that I'm really happy with the job that Southgate did. I think, especially the media here. I don't know about elsewhere, but there's a lot of picking him apart and finding
guilty
excuses.
Guilty as charged.
and finding any excuse to kind of downplay his success, I think. But what I would say is that in my lifetime, we've had a number of different managers. We've had a number of different golden generations, or whatever you want to call it. And there's never been anything close to success. I think that when we talk about kind of easy run-ins, as we did in the World Cup, and now here again, it's an easy side of the draw. I just feel like 10 years ago, we could have had the same draw and we would not have beaten these teams. We would have lost to Ukraine, really, believe me. We've seen it happen. We've seen the draws with Algeria, the draws with the United States. We've seen just pathetic, unbelievable performances against really low-level sides. And I feel like we're at a stage now where, you know, you can only beat the teams that are there too. I think it's a little bit disrespectful when people try and, you know, claim, oh, well, it's only Denmark. That's the reason why you're there. You know, like Denmark were in the semifinals for a reason. They're a good team. And I think, I don't know, we could do that all day. Maybe if we played France on the other side of the draw, we would have gone out. Or if we'd have played this other team, we would have gone out. But I think just maybe the style aside, because there's legitimate criticism to be made there. But I think in terms of the getting the wins and getting to the semifinals and the final back-to-back, I think it's great. Like, and I couldn't think of another person I would want to take over. I would be genuinely devastated if he left, really. I think this is our opportunity right now, maybe in the next World Cup and maybe the Euros after, to really try and actually win something. And I think if we don't, I don't imagine who we could bring in. Really, we bring in someone amazing on paper, elite, you know, extravagant manager, and I just feel like we'd be going out in the quarters, or probably last 16. That's what we always did. Capello, we did nothing. It meant nothing. Eriksson, we did nothing. Quarterfinals, I don't know. I feel like we should trust the process.
Yeah. As the old adage, or new adage, I mean, because this was a thing. I mean, it did. The concept sort of existed before, but it really gained popularity through the Philadelphia 76ers and the NBA. It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the analysis of Southgate, I think, is a little bit complicated because these two things are kind of true at the same time. He has done a solid job. They have gotten to the semifinals and the final consecutively. There is a lot of encouraging signs. At the same time, more so than against Croatia, because again, the expectations were quite low in 2018, and the tournament had been pretty good, and just to get there after 2016 was really, really positive. This time, it does really feel, to me at least, like an opportunity wasted. Like, I mean, Italy was there for the taking to a certain extent. They are a tough team, but England never shot again after a shot on goal after the one goal, and so it's like. I don't know. It just really feels like it didn't have to get to the shootout. It didn't have to be all this like drama that's kind of ensued afterwards for reasons that probably don't want to get into too much, because I mean it is kind of how to put it. Kind of discouraging, kind of infuriating and frustrating how it all kind of unfolded later because of all the fallout from the shootout. But yeah, apart from that, it's just that's kind of the feeling that I kind of left with, because again, I don't really make a whole lot. Oh, they beat the Ukraine. I don't think that's a solid enough argument. They beat Germany. Okay, Germany isn't at their highest moment ever, but they still beat them in a complicated game. Then they passed through the Ukraine with ease, 4-0. And then against Denmark. Again, Denmark was playing well, and at the end, England was the superior team, and they really played well in that game. I felt that they really went for it. They really took advantage to some extent that Denmark were at the end really tired out, really, really drained. I think the second goal comes like it did, like with some controversy, but I think England deserved that wholeheartedly. And again, scoring so early, having the opportunity in Wembley after the tournament, having all that level of talent, it does feel like an opportunity that came and went. And I we'll see. Again, thankfully, they're very young. Barring Harry Kane, the players are like really like starting out right now. Rashford to a certain extent, Sancho, obviously, Grealish to some point as well. And yeah, we'll see. I do think a lot about Belgium and how Belgium's window has probably closed, even though they had like these 10 years and they didn't end up winning anything. I don't know if there's something that you would like to touch on from all that or from your own point of view.
I think that's definitely valid, I think. But the problem with hindsight is that, you know, I would have, looking back, I'd probably like to us to had a more of a go. Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, it's crazy to say, obviously, but we would have been better off scoring after 70 minutes, you know. It's a shame that we scored so early. But I feel that it's one of those things. I think a couple of pundits have said this or whatever, but if we would have rode out the 1-0 and Bonucci hadn't have scrambled that one in, and we'd have rode our luck all the way and won 1-0 in the 90 minutes, it would have been this this Italy-esque masterclass, you know.
Well,
just they held on and they won 1-0. I just feel that.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Maybe not in a critical thinking way, but I mean in terms of the public,
and a basic sense, yes, yeah, yeah.
Nobody would be. I mean, they'd know the genuine criticisms about the style. They would. That's a thing. But I just think most people, they wouldn't care to even think about it. They'd just be like, okay, we won. That's all that matters. So it's one of those going into it from his point of view. I understand that I agree with you that I feel we could have been a little bit more adventurous, but only a little bit more, honestly, though, I think. I do think the defensive platform was the most important thing. The fact that we kept on not conceding and we did concede chances, but I feel like in general, the control that we had in games, not necessarily the Italy game, but in general across the tournament, I'm used to watching England just being really erratic, really out of control. It is like a soap opera, you know? It's, oh, my God, and it's 3-1 at halftime against Germany, and it's crazy, and there's goals flying in, there's fouls, there's all sorts of antics going on, and I felt like watching us this tournament, the Ukraine game, for example, I know that they're a weaker team, but in years gone past, we would have played that weaker team. We would have made it like a really dramatic, crazy. We'd have been 1-0 down going into the 70th minute, scrambling for an equalizer or something. This time you're watching it and it's so weird. I remember saying to my friend, this feels weird. I can't even process this. Why are we just comfortably winning? This is not what we do. And it's not about the level of player, because with Gerrard, you know, Beckham, Lampard, all these greats on the pitch, I would have still felt equally afraid, like, surely we're going to screw it up. But I never really felt that this time. I mean, when we played Germany, even but for the Müller miss. When Müller missed, I knew. I was like, okay, something's different. This is weird. That would not happen usually. Yeah. Why didn't he score? Why are we still in front? And then I felt, besides that, we controlled the game. And I feel like going into the Italy game, I can understand why Southgate might have thought, okay, let's just, you know, keep it really tight. You know, we'll try and kind of play our game, but we won't be too. But he could have done a little bit more. I would concede that we could have gone a little bit further. And not only that, that the tactics of it, but I think the kind of the game management, the fact that we left the subs really late. I mean,
even throughout the game, it's not so much, oh, they end up losing. Like, even throughout the game, it's like, why is he waiting so much? Why is he letting Italy getting back into it? Why is he? It's just, those little moments really felt like.
The more momentum they built, and you could see it happening, and you were thinking, just do something, change something. Not even necessarily just the generic throw on Grealish, but like maybe change something in the shape, maybe react to what they're doing. Even if it's a defensive change, I don't just make a change, do something. And we didn't do that. And then obviously the whole penalty substitution thing. I mean, I think we don't need to go into that, but to bring on three guys with 2 minutes left,
the second to come on did come on in the second half, I think, and then Sancho and Rashford right at the end. Yeah.
But the Sancho and Rashford thing, I mean, I'm not calling for Southgate's head, but that was crazy. Really, really terrible idea.
Yeah, I mean, I get the logic. Like, again, they had, like, great track records, both of them scoring penalties. That's great. But I think it's one of those. I think it's an interesting example, I think, and also the sort of culture war that exists within football nowadays and within football clubs. Also with the analytics revolution and all that, the making the decisions, like, just pure, like, too based on the numbers with removing too much context. And again, I think this kind of plays into it a little bit because, yes, they have great track records scoring penalties, but again, it's not the same to score a penalty in a Bundesliga game for Sancho against Freiburg in the 53rd minute, and to do it at that it stays in, not to say anything about his character or his lack of ability to perform under that amount of pressure, but again, bringing them on at that moment of the tournament is like, okay, you haven't trusted these guys enough to play basically at all through the whole tournament. You're bringing them on at this moment in time with all this pressure, with 96 on your mind. It's like, I don't know. It felt really frustrating because he's the guy that missed the penalty, and like to put all mount all this pressure and like have. And again, I'm sure Saka was all up for it to take the fifth and to let him do it. And Southgate trusted him, and I don't think that's a bad decision per se. But again, it's like this really young guy that like two seasons ago, he was not even in the first team for Arsenal. It's all these things like, come on, man. I mean, it's not so much just because it turned out badly. Like, again, they could have scored, they could have won. But again, to push it to that extreme and to like be on the verge of like losing it all as they ended up doing did feel like one of those things that could have been avoided to some extent.
Yeah. 100%. And it's not with penalties, it's difficult because, you know, the old cliche, it's a lottery or whatever. You know, Saka could have easily put it that side really nonchalantly, and Donnarumma could have happened to have gone the other side, whatever. Yeah. But there are criticisms to be made. And I think the Saka one doesn't even bother me as much. It's more the Rashford and Sancho one, because we could have still won the shootout if they've scored, and they are more than capable of scoring really good takers. But when you're stone cold,
you've been like, on the pitch bring for it on for the whole of extra time, not in the 119th minute. It's...
And when they get to take the penalty, they're warm. I mean, if me and you went over the park now and you just went in the goal and the very first, don't do anything, don't even jog, just in case, score a penalty.
Yeah.
That's weird. Like, you'd rather play a little while, get a touch of the ball. Yeah. It's just, like you said, that difference between the kind of analytical side and the kind of instinctive side that instinctively that doesn't make sense to... Because I think Rashford under normal circumstances would score 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And Sancho too. And... Yeah. I get that he trusted Saka. That's cool. Even if Saka misses, then, okay, we've got... It's not so bad because the other guys can put them away. But I feel like he hamstrung Sancho and Rashford there. And but, you know, it's one of those, like we said, like all these things. Donnarumma could easily choose the wrong side. It could easily be a poor penalty that still goes in. Mm-hmm. And we win. And big celebrations. Southgate's the hero. So, I don't know. But in general, I'm super pleased with the tournament and with him and his performance. But there are things to tweak. For sure. But we're making progress. We've got one step further. Maybe in Qatar we can take the final step.
Hopefully, hopefully. And within the shootout, one little thing that, I mean, it's pretty irrelevant, but how Harry Maguire took the penalty, I mean, that was just amazing. How he just, like, I mean, it could have gone all the way to Stamford Bridge, that ball, like going over the roof of the stadium, and no problem, but it went and in the top hand corner like that. That was really, really fun. It's like, okay, he's going to score it, and he scored it, and there was no stopping
Cameron,
that.
Didn't he, I think?
Yeah, no, he did actually. He broke it. The signal went completely out.
So that's the kind of penalty taker you want right there.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we did see a lot of interesting things. I think for as much as, like, I think it was too conservative to have Rice and Phillips all the time on the pitch, like, I think this tournament for Calvin Phillips was a pretty huge thing and remarkable, and it speaks really well of his capabilities after the whole season he's had at Leeds with all the responsibility. I mean, being pushed to the extreme and really, I mean, used by Bielsa for the whole season, and having that amount of responsibilities to translate that to England and be a really good player. I think he did really well. Again, to some extent, the system kind of maybe made them not show their whole array of abilities going forward, but I think Phillips did really well. Rice did pretty decently as well. And I think there's a lot of, like, interesting things and positive things that have arisen from this tournament and how it's developed and how it's helped players such as him flourish.
Yeah, 100%. I think he came on leaps and bounds. And like you said, the energy that he has considering playing the whole tournament under Bielsa. I thought he played fantastically and really grew into the tournament. And like you said, he couldn't show all of his weapons, but he committed to the system really well, which I prefer as well, that, you know, it's better to have a player who's willing to buy into exactly what they're told to do than a player who's going to show you lots of things that the manager doesn't want that maybe don't necessarily work for the system, and then we can critique the system properly because it's not the player's fault. They do exactly what they're told, and I felt Phillips did that, and Rice too. And I'm surprised that Henderson didn't. It's difficult, though, because as he kind of came into fitness, I guess, later on, you would have been tempted to maybe start him in some games, but it would have been pretty harsh to take someone out, I think, especially Phillips. I would have been a little bit disappointed to see him come out of the team. So I guess you probably just would have liked to have seen 4-3-3 played a little bit more so the two of them had someone in there with them and they could all maybe push forward a little bit more, but... It's one of those things. So many positives, even with the system and how restrictive it is. I do think it is a positive to say that we conceded one goal in open play in the whole tournament. That is a great thing. If we can just add a little bit more.
Open play, I was thinking, no, at least two. Denmark from the
one
free
in
kick,
the open play, and then the great free kick.
Yeah.
Which I know that Pickford got some flack for, but I don't know,
it was really well taken. Yeah, it was a little bit centered, but I don't think that, I mean, it was really an error at all by Pickford.
No,
and Pickford had a great tournament. I mean, all things considered, like, I mean, there were, I mean, and at times you can see his tendencies and you can see the risk that he brings inherently to the game, but I think still, like, he performed really well under pressure. He really was a difference maker at critical spots, and it's always funny, like, when they shoot on him, he, like, has this reaction, like, why are you guys letting them shoot at all? Like, yeah, this really, like, indignant that. Look on his face, like, why are you letting them shoot? And then I find that really funny.
Me too. He's, like, enraged whenever he has to make a save. I love it. But he makes a lot of great saves. And and I think the key thing with him, too, is that there's not the competition there. You know, when people do give him stick for his distribution, for example, and, you know, at times he's a little bit, like, erratic. But who would you replace him with, really? Honestly, I don't think that Pope, Johnston, or Henderson are better than him.
Yeah,
really,
we'll see about Henderson, but I don't think Pope really, I mean, if Pickford is in the zone and can stop basically anything that's shot at him, I think that's what Pope brings. Pope doesn't bring a noticeable improvement on distribution. So, like, yeah, we'll see about Henderson, but I don't think Pope and Johnston, because they're really in the same kind of vein that he is, I don't think they will be very much of a threat. But we'll see. In any case, no, he did really well. Any other players? Any other things you'd like to point out, or that you would like?
Oh, I thought Shaw was just unbelievable.
Yeah,
really.
In the final,
I thought he was great every time he played, and I mean Sterling obviously goes without saying. Sterling surprised me because, you know, he has had a wretched season. I don't really like this this thing though, that this kind of short term thinking. People seem to think Sterling is a terrible player, that he's a bad player. They forget the years of how. Maybe it's just me, but I think he's been just unbelievable for years and years and years. And at Man City, so consistent, so many goals, assists. But he always gets that thing, doesn't he, about, oh, yeah, well, it's easy to just tap in. Well, why isn't everyone doing that? Why isn't that happening constantly? He's so good at beating. And even at England, it translates, same thing again. Give it to the guy out wide, get straight in the middle, nice tap in. He does it over and over. But I was surprised because this year he has dropped off a little bit. And, you know, when he made the starting lineup in the Champions League final, there were a lot of gasps. Then when he made the starting lineup in the first game for England in the place I was watching, there were a lot of, oh, okay, well, I wouldn't have done that because he's really out of form. But he, I don't know, returned to glory. I thought he was really good in every game. Again, there's not a lot you can do in that system. He's not getting constant, like, chances to do things, but I felt like he made the most of the chances he did have to affect the game, and I thought he was probably our best player, personally.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't such a fan of his tournament. Like, I mean, it was interesting because I would watch him, and like many instances, like I get so frustrated with a lot of his like deficiencies on the offensive side. But again, he tries and keeps trying. And I think that's very positive, the fact that he has that mentality to be able to keep going, to be able to keep cool within the frustration. And again, I think in a system more like Guardiola's at Manchester City, like he would be able to flourish a little bit more. Here it was just a thing, like give him the ball, but he isn't quite that ball carrier to really like get around everyone, like maybe Grealish to some extent, and even more so Sancho. So like again, I think maybe if he would have played with them too, and again a system a little bit more conducive to making him look better, I think he would have, apart from the goals, he would have looked better and play. But again, he was able to score the goals, he was able to make the difference, so I think that is something that, even for all his faults in his game, I think that's something that cannot be underestimated or overestimated in this case. It's a really interesting tournament by England. I think a bit of an opportunity miss, but again, they are a lot of them very young. They do have this whole generation feels like we'll have more opportunities. Like again, like Sancho's so young, Kellen Phillips to some extent, Rice obviously, Mount, Foden, Saka, Bellingham, Rashford as well. Like I think that
future's bright.
Yeah, that is quite encouraging, and also the future is probably quite encouraging as well. I think more so than for England, because England did come with expectations. We had Spain on the other side of the bracket also in the tournament, which Spain had a tournament much better than many people expected. With Spain, it was just much more complicated, again, because they weren't coming off of a semifinal in Russia 2018. They were coming off from being, in the end, humiliated to some extent by Russia in the last 16 in 2018, because, again, that is a game they should have won, and just kind of got away from them. They lost in the penalty shootout and all of that. So, and again, there had been a lot of turmoil within the team, well, in Russia since then. And I think Luis Enrique did a great job. Did a really good job. Again, there's a few baffling decisions in the selection of the team that ended up going to the Euros, not taking players such as Sergio Canales from Betis or Iago Aspas from Celta. I think those were like a couple of decisions. Like, why aren't you taking two of the best players of La Liga in this past season? In the end, it ended up going well for him. I think he, despite the very slow start, the very disappointing start, being nullified by Sweden, almost losing to Poland. Then they did like beat the brakes off of Slovakia, but again, those two first games did really feel like, oh, now we could go out in the group stage against these other three teams, which we are vastly superior against. And at the end, they didn't. Like, they beat Slovakia. They came back from that horrifying mistake by Pedri and more so Unai Simon against Croatia. Yeah, and it was very interesting like that. It was very interesting to observe the country kind of coming together, coming around to the team, and like being encouraged and having this like good spirit and good feeling all around. Like, that game against Croatia really did a lot. Like, that's I feel like the key moment. Yeah, they beat Slovakia, but that wasn't. Yeah, it was a little more of a ruder game. And here, having to fight against the current runner-up of the world after losing to France in 2018. That was a really good game, and it really helped a lot. Then beating Switzerland and the shootout was really big, because again, England has its own like history with shootouts and with like these crucial moments going against them. Spain has it as well, and like in 2008 in the Euros, then they were really able to overcome that to a great extent against Italy, but again, having the opportunity again, beating Switzerland, in this case, making it to the semifinals, almost making it to the finals, like, it was a tournament that started off roughly, that it was really shaky, but again, they were able to almost make it all the way. What were your views from Northern Europe out there on that little island called Great Britain?
To be honest, I wasn't as concerned, really, in the first two games. A lot of kind of media personalities here were talking about just how horrifically boring Spain were and how, you know, terrible and they're totally going out. And I didn't really see that personally. I thought that...
I loved how Danny Murphy called Pau Torres a slow defender when he was the fastest center back in all of La Liga in 2020-2021.
Classic English punditry there. I mean, there were a lot of examples of great English punditry in this tournament. The only refreshing thing was every time you hear Ali McCoist on ITV, yeah. Ali McCoist is just a national hero here, I think, for everyone. I can't remember her name. Can you remember the name of the Chelsea coach?
Oh, yeah, Emma Hayes, yes.
Emma Hayes, there you go.
She's really good.
Really nice, really great. Yeah. She was like the shining light, I guess, in terms of commentary. But for the most part, it's just horrific. But anyway, to get back to your question, there were loads of comments about how, you know, just, oh my god, how terrible is Spain. And I was thinking that, yeah, I mean, I felt like the little cutting edge wasn't there, but in terms of controlling the game, dominating, having chances, I didn't find it as boring to watch as most people did. And I wasn't really surprised come the third game that it really kicked into gear and I thought, okay, here we are, and now it's business as usual. But I still think, I guess, I didn't expect them to go as far as the semis, because like you said, it's expectations have been lowered and the team's maybe not quite where they used to be, but it wasn't like a crazy shock or anything. It wouldn't have been like Ukraine getting there. It's still Spain. Spain is still Spain. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, though, because obviously you're way more connected to the Spanish media and stuff, despite mm-hmm. being where you are.
Yeah.
Now that I don't live in Spain anymore, I mean, I read a couple of articles from Spanish newspapers here and there, and mm-hmm. obviously I have friends who I speak to, but I'm not constantly bombarded with the media.
Yeah.
What was the kind of how was the reaction to Enrique after the first couple of games, and how did it change? So not so much the people, but the media reaction. Was it, okay, this is horrible, this is, you know, this, especially given that he didn't pick any Real Madrid players. I just assume with the yeah. vested interests that there are there,
yeah.
there could have been a big witch hunt. That's just what I imagine.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely the case. I mean, well, I mean, they are like the lowest hanging fruit, but El Chiringuito did exactly that. Like, oh, he should have been sacked after the two games, and then, oh my God, that we have to rally Spain up together. It's like, oh my God, they've won, or like, he's done such a great job. I mean, Luis Enrique does have a bit of the problem if he is really like kind of abrasive with the media and with people in general. Like, that doesn't help his cause a lot, so that doesn't create a lot of goodwill around him. But again, he is a really, really qualified coach, really capable, and I think he did a really good job managing all that, because again, after two games, like, people and the media, of course, were really like on edge about it all, about selection, about Morata and Luis Enrique really like trusting him and the decisions that were made. Like, there was really like all this like really sort of tension, and yeah, it was sort of like that. Like, after the first two games, everyone was losing kind of their minds about him, and yeah, again, because he's not that well liked to many extents, like that doesn't help. But yeah, once they started winning, everything turned around, and everything was kind of, well, more the unison and more like more just goodwill around the whole thing, and really encouraging. And yeah, it just really like lame, and like, yeah, they really go like from wherever the wind blows, they go right yeah. behind. So like, yeah, that was one of those funny things that they do.
Just like our tabloid press here, you know, it's yeah. just worst manager ever, fire him immediately. Then they kind of get a sense that, no, yeah. people are behind him now. Okay, we like him.
Yeah.
I guess in other sort of negative stuff, I mean, obviously we had the, you know, horrific negativity after our defeat with the racist abuse and everything, which was predictable, but, you know, very infuriating.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you for the parallel on Morata, because it's not the same thing, but I know that earlier in the tournament he was already getting like death threats or whatever to his family and stuff, which is just shows the parallel that we have, I think, in terms of, I don't know, just fans that are a little bit unhinged. I just wonder, after the semi and crashing out, I mean, was that ramped up? Did you hear, were there more news stories about him getting abuse or going into hiding or anything, or did people calm down a little bit?
Not that I know of. I think people mostly calmed down. I mean, because he did score the equalizing goal, and he did like play well. And again, it's like, holy shit. And then he has to go and miss the penalty. Yeah. Like, when it was all when perfectly set up for him to like redeem himself completely. It's like,
oh, I knew it. I knew he would miss.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure it ramped up a little bit, but nothing like at the beginning. I think people kind of calm down. Again, with him, it's a little bit complicated. I think he doesn't, I mean, it's really easy to say from far away, I'm not in his position at all, but I think he has really these tendencies to like feed the fire a little too much. Like, again, it's not, I don't think it's bad that he's really candid in public, but I think he is a little too much for his own good, and I think a lot of this could be reduced to some extent, because not just so much like in England, where it's just much more vitriolic based on stuff much more disgusting as like discrimination on race. Like, with him, it's just, I feel a lot of, in his like sort of whole like people that surround him and his entourage a little bit, I don't think he's in the most like positive helpful environment in that sense. I think a lot of these things by people that know a little bit more what they're doing, and they could probably guide him a little bit better. These things, he could go through these things a little bit with a little bit more ease, because again, he's really like forced into these really like well, unpleasant situations, and again, people just losing their mind about him, because he is a pretty decent striker. Again, he plays for Juventus. He isn't like one, like someone just brought off the street, is playing just for Huesca or anything like that. Like, I mean, he is a He has a pretty decent streak.
Huesca.
Yeah. Huesca attacked that. Well, I came to mind. Rafa Mir, I know he did. He played a good season at Huesca. I mean, so it's like, okay, was that like someone that's coming from a smaller team that would be easily belittled by the media? So, I mean, he is like a player of really great stature. So, again, that's I think it's an interesting case study. And, again, I'm really good friends with a former teammate of his. Who comes on my other podcast. So yeah, and analyzing the whole thing and kind of going through the whole tournament, I think there's things he could probably do better to make his life a little bit easier within like this kind of insane kind of environment that social media can create at times. But yeah, I think in the end, scoring that great goal against Croatia, scoring that really good goal against Italy as well, he missed the penalty, but again, he was able to sort of redeem himself with those two crucial goals against Croatia and against Italy. So thankfully, I think that kind of passed. And the fact that Gerard Moreno did played that tournament, it was much poorer than Morata in the end. Like, I think he was just as erratic without the redeeming moments at all. So I think that probably helped his cause. And he will like remain until someone new can emerge. He will remain as the main priority in, on the offensive side of the ball,
I guess. I was surprised by Moreno because I obviously he's had a fantastic season, and I did think that especially in those early games when Morata was struggling,
yeah,
and they were bringing on Moreno, I thought Moreno was gonna kind of step up and save the day sort of thing and become the hero, but yeah, it didn't work out that way. But I guess because we touched on a lot of our, you know, crashing out moment, mm-hmm. In the final,
yeah.
What about the semi against Italy? So, I mean, I feel like most people agree that Spain were the better side and mm-hmm. and probably should have gone through. And obviously, I would have preferred that because I have kind of an allegiance to Spain. Yeah. And without being too disrespectful, I felt like we could have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think Spain were actually the better team, I felt like in a way their style might help us kind of thing. Whereas Italy, I just thought... It's, you know, they just got that thing, haven't they?
At both ends of the pitch. Like, again, they have Immobile, yeah. Italy, and they do have a little bit of that issue. But again, Chiellini, Bonucci on the other side, Donnarumma, of course. And then even though they have Immobile, they still have Insigne and Chiesa. So again, they do have more of that edge, it feels like. And yeah, Spain does lag a little bit of that edge, both and defense and both on offense, so...
Little bit of a soft underbelly that, like, it's a great team, yeah. Amazing players and stuff, but I felt like we could steal one against them. But I think Italy, there's no stealing, you know, they're going to be the thieves if anything that's going to happen. So I was obviously rooting for Spain, and I felt like that Spain acquitted themselves well, but in the end, went out on penalties. What did you make of the game? Is there anything Enrique could have done differently? Is there anything that the team could have done differently?
I don't think so markedly as England in the final, but I think, yeah, there's probably a few things that could have maybe been done quicker, a little bit differently. I think the going out with Oyarzabal for is irrelevant to some extent, as he was in the play. Like, he wasn't really able to make a dent, make a mark on the game with playing with the false nine, basically, sort of thing. With Olmo playing really as a false nine, then Oyarzabal on the left, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I think that was good initially. I think that really kind of confused Italy, or was able to like really unsettle them for periods. Again, not having that player, if Oyarzabal would have been able to be that player to really have that edge, even coming from the wing, have that edge, being able to score those opportunities, being able to put Italy away, that would have been sufficient. But again, I think in overtime or extra time, like just against like against Switzerland, they did kind of lack. I think Luis Enrique did kind of made some mistakes, or like bringing on Thiago weirdly, like he did bring him on a little bit later than he did against Switzerland. In both cases, he wasn't really able to make a difference. He made like terrible passes for being one of the best passers of the ball in all of football. Like, that was surprising. And again,
I agree.
Yeah, there's little few things that could have maybe been a little bit more crisp, probably using Marcos Llorente in a little bit more of a incisive and decisive way could have been something that, that could have also made a difference. I don't know. I think that there's a few things that could probably have been done a little bit better. I know Wolves fans might get upset about this. I'm glad he didn't just go to, like, let's give the ball to Adama Traore and let's see what he...
Adama!
Yeah. Like, I think that was good that he just didn't go to that. They did try, but again, I think those little few pieces that they're missing kind of showed against Italy in the end, so I don't quite hold it against him quite as much. But yeah, there was a few maybe little moments where he could have been a little bit sharper in the decision making.
Yeah, I think the Thiago thing definitely was one. I felt like every time he came on, it didn't really have any effect. He looked a bit, I don't know, off the pace maybe. Yeah. It could just be a matter of confidence again. No confidence in the coach, or less confidence, I guess. I agree with you that I'm glad he didn't just roll the dice with Adama in the 80th minute. That would have been weird.
Yeah.
Again, because I don't think he played a single minute, did he?
No, I don't think he did, no.
So that would have been very strange, yeah. But, you know, clearly I don't rate you as a player, but please come on and run at someone.
Yeah.
With 10 minutes left, that would have been asking a lot, I think. But speaking of, you mentioned with England that the future could be bright, which I agree. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Spain were the youngest squad in the tournament and reached the semi-finals. Adama is just one of the young shining lights that could be the future of Spain. Do you think that the future is bright going into the next World Cup and the tournaments after? I know that Pedri had a fantastic tournament. Everyone's raving about him. But there are a lot of other guys in there. I mean, how old is Dani Olmo? He must not be too old, right? 21, no, 23.
22,
yeah.
23.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought he had a great tournament. I thought a lot of, maybe sometimes he wasn't quite clinical, but he caused a lot of problems playing in that role. And I think there's, yeah, Pau Torres, how old must he be? 24 or something like that?
He's, yeah, 24, exactly, yes.
Can't be too old. So you've got a lot of great sort of early 20s players. Yeah. And I feel like there's definitely something to build on. What do you think? Do you think that the future is bright? Do you think Pedri is going to be the next kind of genius to take you to the next level? Where do you see Spain going in the coming years?
Pedri does look like that. I mean, again, a lot of the great ones that Spain has produced, like, they didn't start even being this bright and so effective so young, and Pedri does look like the complete package, so that is very, very encouraging. And yeah, we talked about this on the podcast that Alineación Indebida, my Spanish podcast, the day that Spain got eliminated by Italy. I remember talking with Rafa Pastrana and Nando Vila, also a great guy that we've found that came on the podcast on that day. And it was interesting kind of discussing what the prospects can be for Qatar in 2022. I think again, as I was saying, the expectations were very low, and I think now the expectations have been elevated because they've showed that they are capable of competing, of being a force to be reckoned with. I think that can be again in the World Cup. We'll see. Again, they do have again the deficiencies and the defense and in the offense as well. But I don't know. I think they could probably find enough solutions. We'll see. Morata will be 30 by that tournament. We'll see if he still remains at that point as the main striker. I know there's a young guy, I don't remember his name, but at Espanyol that looks pretty promising. That could be maybe the next big thing. We'll see about that. Yeah, because I think in the attack that will be the most interesting thing. We'll see how Rafael Oyarzabal can really mature into being a player that can make consistently a difference as a winger. Like, he's still 24 at the moment of recording. And yeah, you have Pedri, as you mentioned, Dani Olmo. I'm really excited about Dani Olmo. I think he can really be a really great player as well. We'll see how he keeps developing. I think being at Leipzig with Nagelsmann has made him like a tons of good. Like, he already came from La Masia in Barcelona. He went to Croatia, which I think was a very interesting but very productive move. And now being at Leipzig under such a great coach. And I think Jesse Marsh will continue that work with him that Nagelsmann has kind of continued himself from acquiring a player coming from Croatia.
Do you see him coming back to Spain, though? It seems like a lot of time. It's strange to have like a top player in the Spanish national team not playing in Spain. And usually, even if they go away for a little bit, they always end up coming back to La Liga.
Yeah, well, they mainly would come back, I would think, to Real Madrid or Barcelona because, I mean, at this point, you're really not going to have them play anywhere else. Atletico Madrid also as the other two. But anywhere else, it would be kind of strange at this point. You do have the two guys at Villarreal. You have Gaya at Valencia. You have Unai Simón at Atletico Bilbao. But yeah, like in his case, unless... Madrid or Barcelona really want to bring him in, I think he would stay at Leipzig. I would maybe even see him going to the Premier League much more easily than to Barcelona or Madrid at this point. We'll see where those two clubs are in the near future. For now, I think being a sort of contender in Germany, like, I mean, they are the first alternative to Bayern Munich alongside Borussia Dortmund. I think for now he'll stay there. And again, there's always the possibility if he flourishes enough to be someone like, okay, like we want this player, Madrid or Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid or Barcelona. I think maybe those three could be an option. And yeah, beyond that, I mean, yeah, we'll see how beyond him, like we'll see the rest of them. Fabian Ruiz didn't have a good tournament. Like I'm not sure if he even played at all, but he's playing at
Napoli. I think he may be going
a few minutes. Yeah, at some point. He's playing at Napoli. Like we'll see how he keeps developing. He's only 25 as well. With Rodri, I don't have a lot of great expectations. Like again, I think I don't think he's ever going to really evolve into being like a Busquets at Busquets is like top level, that peak level he reached in his career. Like I think he's always going to be a player that can't quite make that level of difference, but we'll see. And Marcos Llorente is still 26. Like he'll be around obviously for the World Cup, and I think it's someone that's going to make a difference now that we'll see what happens with Sergio Ramos in the future, and now he's gone to Paris, but Laporte has been great. Like that was, I think without him, they could have gone out in the group stage. They could have really, really, really been shaky at the back. And I think with him, like you really have an elite defender alongside Azpilicueta as well. Like it took a while again to have Azpilicueta, and in all these years, like he should have been playing more consistently for him. But he's finally playing. I think those two are two crucial difference makers. They play in.
I'm trying to remember who really was keeping teams. Him out of the team.
It was who was Marcos Llorente was they started a tournament playing Marcos Llorente at right back, which was like, come on, what the hell are you doing with Marcos Llorente at right back? I mean, he's a player with like a box to box sort of player that can like, we just put him on the right side of the defense and just kind of have him run up and down. But again, he wasn't really well utilized there. And before that, who am I forgetting that always played at right back?
Yeah, I feel like back in the day, because I know Azpilicueta's playing kind of like in the back three for Chelsea now. But
yeah,
before then, you know, when he was just kind of conventional right back,
Carvajal. Like, Carvajal would be in this case.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, for
Carvajal was keeping him out.
Yeah, but
well, it's cool that he's playing now. But I agree with you about Laporta. I think the seamless transition as well. I mean, did he even play the friendlies
before? I don't think he did.
he
might have. Like I'm not sure. I didn't pay attention to the friendlies, but
he became Spanish, and then pretty much 2 days later, he was playing in a major tournament. Yeah. You know, must have had no chemistry with the squad, with the coach, and I felt like he played really well, not only in terms of defending, but being dangerous at set pieces at the other end as well. And really, really nice addition for you guys. And I guess, like you said, Morata has been good, and he is a top level striker. He wouldn't be playing for Juve if he wasn't, but maybe he's not quite on that level of Torres or Villa or like that. Maybe you need the next one of those, right? And if you can get that, then you could be winning tournaments again.
Yeah,
but I hope not, because you've won enough. I mean,
three straight tournaments.
Time to let the others have a turn.
No, absolutely. And someone I think will be interesting. Well, we'll see how it all kind of develops in goal. But I think at this point, we'll see how Unai Simón does. He does have pretty glaring holes in his game, but he did well here. I think De Gea's time is over at this point, just because it just never clicked with the national team. And again, his career has kind of been erratic towards these last few years. Again, he was Manchester United's player of the season for 5 straight years, something like that. But at this point, it doesn't feel like that quite that force that he was, and it never worked really in Spain as well. So I think his time will probably be, unless he really has a resurgence in Manchester United, and he just has to, he just forces his
if he gets a move.
Yeah, or if he gets a move, something like that.
He was one of the he was super elite, I think, at one point. He was by far their best player consistently, and probably in the top three keepers in the world. And it really has been like a kind of significant drop off, I think. Not to compare him to like Joe Hart, because I think he was always much better, but on a different type of thing. Joe Hart went from being super dependable, quite high level keeper to, I don't know, just absolute crazy free fall. And I feel like De Gea is, he's free falling, man. He's going down, down, down every year. And I don't know, he needs a move. He needs to, because he's still relatively young. If he could go somewhere and be first choice, be really good again, he could be Spain's first choice keeper easily. But
we'll see about that. Yeah, again, I believe him to be one of the best shot stabbers I have ever seen in football. But again, just purely shot stabbing, again, with the rest of the aspects of being a goalkeeper, I think he showed he isn't quite that elite level. And once he wasn't able to stop at that crazy rate that he did for those few years at Manchester United, like, it did kind of become a bit more of an issue. We'll see. I think we'll see what happens with Henderson. I'm still not quite convinced Henderson is the choice for Manchester United. He could still regain his position there, and maybe someplace, I don't know, like Milan. I know they need a goalkeeper now. Maybe something somewhere like that could work.
Oh, they just signed Mike. I'm probably saying this wrong. Mike Maynard.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, okay, they needed someone for.
So, but you're right. Yeah. Someone
like that. The goalkeeper market is always very complicated. Like, there's not just places to go exactly to really, I mean, at a high level.
What about Sevilla?
They have two. Like, they have not just Bono from U2, but they also have, they just signed Dimitrovic from Eibar. So, like, settled. So, yeah, it's one of those complicated things, but in any case, we'll see how that develops. But apart from De Gea, we'll see how Unai Simón does, but I'm really interested to see how Robert Sanchez does, because, like, he's been really good for Brighton. And, like, if he would have been in the team earlier, I mean, there wasn't really a chance because he just, like, debuted for Brighton in November, October, something like that. He's been really good the rest of the season. He ends up getting the call-up, but again, it's like, it would be really a little too abrupt, probably just throw him into the Lions Den and have him start. But I think he is probably the most complete package within the options, like, probably more so than Unai Simón. So if he develops well in Brighton, really becomes one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League, like, that will be someone to really have an eye out for, because I think he can be like the next starting goalkeeper for Spain. So I think that will be an interesting thing to pay attention to as well.
How long do you see Busquets carrying on with the national team? Because I thought he was great. Just after the whole coronavirus thing, which was kind of been the best start to the campaign. Spain seems to have a lot of these crazy dramatic starts recently with the whole Hierro thing last time. But I thought after he came in and got going, I thought he looked just as good as he always has. And do you reckon, I mean, surely Qatar, I should think,
probably. Well, he does turn 33 tomorrow. We're recording this on the 15th of July. On the 16th, he will be 33. He'll be 35 by Qatar. He might hang around for that. And it was interesting because he played at this tournament, I felt like, much better than he'd done for Barcelona for the last 2 years. So, like,
that's what I thought. I thought he was on the way out. I couldn't believe how good he was.
Yeah, like, he did feel like, it was just one of those guys that he was never really quick, and it just got to a point that, like, even at 30, he just wasn't able to make the same level of difference, and apparently he still has it, so we'll see. I mean, again, it was a more concentrated sort of example, or sort of like proof, like, again within a very, like, concentrated little, like, tournament, it's easier. But I don't know, we'll see how he does. He's still, like, he is one of the best to ever do it for Spain. So we'll see if he's able to hang around. We'll see what happens to Barcelona. But yeah, no, it was really encouraging to see him play at that high level for Spain under
like
pressure.
Like you said, it's a small sample size.
Sample size,
right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's the term I was looking for. Yeah.
When you know, can he do it every week for Barca in La Liga? But I think probably he can for a couple more years, and I would definitely take him to Qatar. But I mean, I guess after him, your pal Rodri is the next.
There is this joke with Rodri that we have used on the podcast, that calling him Rodrizontal, basically Rodri Zontal, that he only knows how to pass sideways. So
that's the key difference. I think he has kind of the same solidity as Busquets and stuff, and I think he does bring a kind of sense of calm in the midfield, and for City I think he does do a great job, but
yeah,
it's not the same as, you know, when Busquets collects it on the half turn,
yeah,
and just plays it through the lines.
Yeah, he's a little quicker, a little snappier with the passes, and just
Rodri's not that guy, is he? He's much more of a David Batty character, I think, but there is a place for that, but
yeah, we'll see. We'll see how the kind of the team shapes up, and that will be a key thing to see how it all kind of fits together.
Yeah, I think the future is bright though for both teams. Really excited to see them both in Qatar, and I think they both have the potential to win the whole thing or crash out in disgrace.
Yes.
Both have the possibility of doing that too, especially with the media pressure. I mean, I'm sure as soon as the tournament comes back around, it will start ramping up, and the
And again, there'll be a lot of competition. Like, France shouldn't go out against Switzerland. And again, Italy will be there with two more years of experience. Germany should bounce back from their recent woes. Belgium, we'll see if Belgium is able to hang around just enough to be able to compete there for the title.
I don't think they'll be serious contenders though, really. I think they're top.
Their peak has definitely passed, but we'll see if they're able to like just be there enough, and like maybe Hazard bounces back enough, and and if they find a good defender, like you can't just go again in 2022 with Bertrand Hena, other writer, and Vermaelen. Like, what are we doing? Putting a guy that's 35 years old. He's playing in Japan. He's hardly played for the past 10 years anywhere because he's been injured. I mean, poor guy. But again, it's like you're going to a Euro Cup or a World Cup with this guy at the center of your defense is like Jesus Christ, but it almost worked out. They were there, they were in contention. We'll see, and they do still have Courtois, Lukaku, De Bruyne, who will also be still a factor at that point. So we'll see, but yeah, they'll be and also like Brazil and Argentina should be considered to some extent there. So yeah, so it'll be interesting for sure.
Anything could happen. There's going to be a bunch of teams, and I think Germany will come back really strong because I feel like they're not as. I think these countries that just have such high standards, like Spain and France and Germany, and to some extent Italy, any drop off is seen as, you know, a disaster. And I feel like they're not quite the team they were, but they are still.
No, they still have a lot of good players. They just kind of have to do click with Flick to do kind of a turn of phrase.
Exactly. When they get Flick in.
Yeah.
I feel like they're basically going to have, you know, Bayern Munich reunion with him. And I think maybe Müller won't. Maybe he won't be playing.
Yeah, but even if he doesn't, like, I think they just kind of need that little extra ingredient because they do have all the kind of sort of players. And again, Kroos has retired from the national team, but again, they still have enough quality. Like, again, and kind of what happened with Chelsea, the Tuchel came in, all of a sudden, Havertz and Werner started producing. So again, they do have the raw materials there to, like, be a contender.
They definitely have the raw materials. That's the thing, I think. It was maybe just more of a coaching issue, and that's why we were able to get by them, I think. But I think on paper, yeah, I mean, and who knows, in a couple of years, there'll be other players that are coming through that maybe we're not even considering right now. So
To some extent, we already heard, like, in the example of England, Sancho for England, like Bellingham, like in 2018, like you're thinking World Cup, you're not thinking of Sancho, you're not thinking of Bellingham, you're not thinking of Saka even. So players that are like really like you're out of your mind at this moment that can like really break through in a season and a half. So we'll see about that.
We will see, and best of luck to both teams. And I think I would say congratulations to both teams and both coaches personally. I think they both did great, and I think at least met expectations, I would say, with the positions they had. I don't know what the expectation was in Spain, but I think to reach a semi is probably...
Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't that. Like, I don't think there was anything like concrete, but just how you saw, like, even when they got eliminated, like there was a lot of like good feeling about the whole thing, like, okay, we got eliminated by Italy in the shootout and could have maybe done a little bit more, but the fact that it looked so bleak at first and then it kind of came around and improved, it got better, I think that did a lot, and again, reaching the semifinals, everyone was really, really happy with that result. So yeah, I think it'll be
the same thing here.
Yeah,
apart from the you know, obviously the elements of society that are you know, despicable, of which we've spoken before. That I think for the most part, it's just a sense of, yeah, we expected to do well. Like, we did think we'd go quite far, and we did. And we held, you know, I would say for sure the best team in the tournament from the moment it started all the way to penalties. They're undefeated in 34 games or something like that. They were there for the taking, but at the same time, we took them as far as we possibly could. We went out on penalties. And I think, you know, You can talk about the systems and everything like that, but in terms of the actual, you know, the result on paper, I think most England fans would be really happy with not only just how the tournament went, but the great memories, you know, that it's just been so fun. It's been so cool to, instead of going to the pub for the last 16 game against Belgium, you know, waiting to go out or whatever,
yeah.
It's been playing against Germany, winning. Oh my God, wow, great feelings, and beating Ukraine and beating Denmark. And it's been really cool. An amazing, amazing summer, really. So hopefully we'll have a great Christmas, I guess, with Qatar.
Like the final will be a great Christmas present to whoever wins, because it'll be right before, I think, the final's on the 22nd or 20th of December, so something cool. Like that. So yeah, that'll be fun and interesting and weird, and like you're playing a guitar and
weird. With, I guess, the league seasons are gonna be
halted, yeah,
like on hold. Yeah. That's gonna be so weird. You know, you'll be watching.
Yeah.
Kind of Brighton versus Everton one day, and then, okay, lads, let's chill for a month or whatever. Yeah. Go to Qatar. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, like, well, what AFCON basically is, like, each year, but, like, the league stopping completely and everyone is going, coming back and getting back into things. Yeah, that'll be so something to see for sure. And the whole thing with Qatar and all that involves, that will be its own kind of thing to contend with. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting. And again, I think, and it's been a really fun Euros. A lot of people have like probably proclaimed it as their favorite tournament ever. For me, nothing will ever top 2018. But I think coming off from that, like, this was a really really nice, fun tournament. Lots of goals. And again, it was one of those things. Like, I mean, I knew it was coming, but I didn't really like. It just was one of those things. Like, after such a long season, and I got right into it as it started. But right in those first couple of weeks, like between the Champions League final and this, is like now the Euros is coming. I wasn't just not have any kind of sort of expectations of anything great happening, and it was ended up being a really, really good tournament. So yeah, I think that at least that and on all senses and kind of, and not, and again, it wasn't perfect. And again, all over Europe and some places having crowds, some not, but like all the scenes in Hungary, at least the good parts of the Hungary sellout in the Budapest Arena and everything else with like England doing well, Spain doing well, Italy doing well in Denmark after what happened with Eriksen, having that rallying together and doing so well. Like, it was a really, really fun tournament. Really, really, really fun.
Really cool. And I think a lot of people had low expectations for the quality too, because I know I expected all the players to be out on their feet and just maybe a lot of kind of, you know, nil nils. And early on, I realized, okay, wow, this is a lot of goals, a lot of action, and really, like you said, a lot of upsets, stories, a lot of stories. And I think for me, it definitely was way above expectations. I really enjoyed it. And I guess that's what'll be so unique about the next one, is we won't know what to expect. I mean, in a way, it could be different to anything we've ever seen because of where it is in the calendar. It's going to be unique. But I think, like you touched on, there's a lot of other considerations with Qatar that are non-football related that I think are somewhat problematic. And in this tournament too, that logistically with the whole lots of different... I think we've learned that experiment didn't work. It's a nice idea, I think, but I don't necessarily think we need to be doing that again, because it does create some kind of, I don't know, fairness issues. I think it is.
Yeah, it just kind of one of those aspects that just ended up being kind of odd. Like, again, it can work sort of maybe in the future in a different sort of format. But yeah, for this, it worked well enough. But yeah, there was still aspects that made it just a little too like all over the place, and having a tournament just be a little bit more compact as sort of, I mean, territorially wise, like maybe Russia was even more traveling to some extent. But again, just being in that one place just makes it, the whole thing just feel a little bit more like put together.
I think I heard someone mention too the carnival atmosphere too. Maybe in Russia it's huge, like you said, but with it being in one country, even if the country is Russia, there's that sense that kind of everyone in the country is, you know, this is that we're all there together. It's this one thing. Whereas I guess it must be weird to kind of, I mean, I guess, I don't know, in Budapest, they probably had a bit of a carnival atmosphere for those games they had, but in general, it would have been different if Hungary had hosted the whole tournament, then the whole thing, the whole country would have been behind it, and it would have felt a little bit different. But I think that in general, they made it work. I mean, COVID doesn't help, obviously. Maybe the concept would be better without COVID, but for the fans, you know, with the restrictions, it's a little bit kind of, you know, it's not very cool for the fans. It's not so cool for the players. And
unless you have money, and then you don't have to do PCRs or anything.
Exactly. That especially if you're UEFA official, then it's pretty cool because you can go to games all over the place. Correct. And have a jet-setting tournament. That would be pretty cool. I can see that. But for the average fan, maybe not so cool. But yeah, I loved it, and I'm so happy that we got to the final. So proud of the boys, and hopefully we can take on this positivity now into the next tournament, into the qualifiers. Well, we have to qualify first, technically.
Well, yeah, but I guess. I mean, unless there's a catastrophe like Italy, like, yeah, it has to really be a big catastrophe. Yeah. Or like,
we're pretty good qualifiers, usually.
Yeah, I mean, barring 2008 and the umbrella and the whole thing, like,
I think we've missed twice in my lifetime, because we missed World Cup 94. And
94, that's right, And 94 as well. Yeah.
But I was only four for that, so it's one of my favorite World Cups, because when I was like six or seven, and I first started knowing what football kind of was, I had a VHS of it, and I loved watching back all the goals and everything, but at the time, I didn't really know or care. So really, 2008 is the only real catastrophe that I've lived through.
Yeah.
And other than that, we're that team that always qualifies in like super dominant fashion.
Yeah.
Against the weaker teams, we always top the group. It's always, oh my god, look at the flair, the 4-0 wins, the 5-0 wins. And then when the tournament comes, it's always, what about when you play a good team? And then
we're not in San Marino anymore, Dorothy.
Exactly. We always fail at that point, but that seems to have changed now. So we can, you know, We can beat some decent teams now, so I think we should be optimistic, and I think Gareth will finally get his vindication.
Hopefully he,
when he lifts the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully he does. Thanks so much for listening to the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, review it with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if that's where you listen to us, and above all, share it widely with friends and foes.
And don't forget to head to www.sportacos.com for news and statistics from the world of football. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's @sportacoscom. You can follow me @CraigSportacos. And Ander, where can they find you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter @AndersHoffman, @AndersHoffman altogether. And also, you can email the podcast show@sportacos.com if you want to connect with us directly in any capacity. With all that being said, thanks again so much for being with us. We'll be back on Monday, and until then, cheerio. Sports Social Podcast Network.